Affairs, meeting of February 15, 1983.
It's just that we'll note that all members are present, with the exception of two members who are excused, one for the day, one will be late. Representative A. John has been excused from the entire meeting. We have several bills before us today, and I have a bill that I put up and a speaker sent it to our committee. It's a very small bill. Representative Van Loon wanted to testify on it. I think if I'll hold on a second, see if she wants to come in. If she doesn't, I'll defend my bill and then we'll get on with something else.
Mr. Chairman, while we're waiting, it seems that when I went through the bills that have been entered into the system, wasn't the one bill dealing with Thanksgiving week or something?
Yes, I'll explain that I'm going to turn the chair over to the vice chair. And okay, then I'll just, would you take the chair and we'll see the ACO report.
Our first witness will be our chairman, Representative Lonnie Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. State Representative Lonnie Roberts, House District 21, East Butler County. Before you is House Concurrent Resolution 4, and it's a very simple bill. I submitted it to the legislature in the 81st session. It got lost in a last-minute shuffle in committee and never got out of committee. I felt it's important enough to me and some of my constituents to resubmit it, and whether it will go to Human Resource Committee as it did 2 years ago, it has been given to our committee, the State and Federal Affairs Committee. All it does, my bill simply declares the first week of July Family Pride Week. We have a problem in that there was a similar bill submitted by Representative Liz Van Loon on behalf of several of her constituents. Theirs was similar, except it declared the week of Thanksgiving as Family Week. I have no problems of amending the bill, call it Family Pride Week, and have it the first week, Thanksgiving Week. Now, is Representative Van Loon here? Okay. But I feel very strongly that in this nation over the last generation or so, we've lost the feeling of family, and I think we've reaped a lot of problems. This bill would not solve anything. I think all it will do is give recognition of the importance of the family unit within our society. We have a week for this and a week for that. We plant trees and a number of other things. I think that in all of this, all of this long list of days and weeks we set aside for special occasions, there has to be and should be a place to declare that family has a great deal of pride and a great deal of importance to the community and to the state. And with that, I have no more to say on the bill. If anyone wishes to ask any questions.
Any questions, members?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I believe that Representative Van Loon is coming in, and as far as I'm concerned, I have no problem with what I think her amendments are going to be.
Well, since you've had a chance to think about it just a little bit, do you think that maybe her time is a better time? Do you have any strong feelings one way or the other?
The reason I picked the first week of July as we celebrate the great birth of our nation, and I felt that the nation was created through strong family, strong community, and so forth. But Thanksgiving is also a time of family, and I have no problem. And I'll support that as one member of the committee without any reservations. I would want to keep the name of Family Pride Week rather than Family Week. But other than that, if she wishes to submit on behalf of her constituents an amendment that will change it to the first or to Thanksgiving week, I have no problem.
Lonnie, do you know where her bill is at, or Diane, do you?
It hasn't been printed yet. It will be either today or tomorrow. Should be back from the printer.
Okay. Members? Comments or questions? Yes, Representative Otto.
Representative Roberts, you stated why it was the first week in July. You might want to think that it should be at some other date when schools are in session, or the majority of schools. I know some schools are in session all the time. So that it could be given recognition by school administrators and teachers and all.
It's a very good point. As I said, of course, the Thanksgiving is a holiday for schools, but prior to that, schools could emphasize that Thanksgiving week is also a week of family pride and understanding the importance of family. And as I said, that's fine with me, and I think you bring up a very good point, Representative Isle. It makes an even stronger case for Representative Van Loon's proposed amendments.
Representative Van Loon is here. Perhaps you'd like to just share that with you, Representative Van Loon.
Oh, that's where we're sitting. Let's see. Oh, the lady here, if it's all right, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Van Loon.
Okay. For the record, I'm Liz Van Loon, State Representative from District 37, and from the little bit I gleaned as I walked in the door, you are dealing with HCR 4, and somewhere in the works we have another bill, but I think we would like to amend it onto here. Is that what you were talking about just now? And I have that proposed amendment. I hope it's right. We would propose that we amend HCR 4 on page 1 of the printed bill, line 8. Do you want all this? Page 1, line...
Oh, my goodness.
Are you all right? But you didn't hurt yourself, did you? Okay. We've already discussed that. There's no problem.
Do I need to say any more after all that happened? And insert the week in which Thanksgiving occurs instead of the first week of July. This is at the bill that I had in, or this amendment is at the request of the Knights of Columbus and of the J.C.'s of Oregon. And we hope to also take care of this so that those people who signed on the bill can be listed as sponsors, but I think that takes floor action.
The rules are that it takes floor action dealing with
Representative
the...
Roberts.
Oh, excuse me, Lonnie Roberts, State Representative. Mr. Chairman, the House rules state that we have to have a vote on the House floor to accept more names. We cannot accept senators' names. There were some senators that did sign on to Representative Van Loon's bill, but they will have to take care of that on the Senate side, providing it gets to the Senate side. I'm not clear on the sponsorship as far as the Knights of Columbus are concerned, but with me it's fine. I'd be very proud to have them on my bill.
Okay, we're not yet in work session, even though we have it scheduled, and so I think we'll wait and see if we have any other witnesses before we proceed with the amendments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Has anyone signed up to testify on House Concurrent Resolution 4, or does anybody else wish to testify from the audience?
Thank you.
Yes, please. I asked her. She said, yeah, but that's yeah, I've got a copy.
Okay. The next bill up is House Joint Resolution 2, Jim Russell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Mr. Chairperson, members of the House State and Federal Affairs Committee, for the record, my name is Jim Russell. I'm one of Governor Attia's assistants. House Joint Resolution 2 has been pre-session filed at the governor's request. Basically, it gives the governor an extra 10 days after the end of the session to review and decide upon all the bills that have come to the governor after the legislature has adjourned and, within 5 days of adjournment. The present constitutional provision gives the governor 20 days. We're requesting an extra 10 days. 20 days simply is not enough. Some of you, I'm sure, recall this same bill from the 1981 session. We submitted it in the 1981 session as House Joint Resolution 9. Some matters had cropped up concerning the possible encroachment by another 10 days of the petition circulation process, which is allowed by the Oregon Constitution. Right now, anyone dissatisfied with a bill that has passed the House and been signed into law is entitled to bring that measure before the citizens if he gets enough petitions. Under the Constitution, he has 90 days to circulate those petitions. If the governor...
Excuse me, Jim, 90 days after his 90 die, am I correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chairperson. If the governor signs on the last or 20th day, of course, they only have 70 days. Because we were requesting an extra 10 days that could be cut from 90 to as much as 60. That was resolved in the last legislative session by saying that the time for circulating petitions would begin when the officers, the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate, signed the bills, even though the governor had not yet acted on the bills. It passed both houses and was placed before the voters in the elections last November. There was a problem. It was viewed by some as perhaps totally encroaching on the right of the citizen to circulate petition, simply because there was a concern that either the Speaker or the President could, in effect, refuse to sign, put it in the bottom drawer or back pocket, if you will, and thereby completely thwart the petition process. Because those issues were raised, it went down to defeat, hence we're here again. The approach this time is different. We're requesting an extra 10 days, raising it from 20 to 30 days, for the governor and our staff to review and decide upon the bills. In addition, we would extend the time within which petitions could be circulated an extra 10 days, from 90 to 100. We would extend the time that bills become effective if they do not have emergency clauses from 90 to 100. In this way, we anticipate that the governor's office will have the extra 10 days of breathing space to review these bills, while the other factors, the petition process and the effective date of the bills, in effect, would remain the same. The extra 10 days would have no effect on that. There is a back page that has been attached. Was some material that was furnished in the last 1981 session, primarily to indicate the last time that it was changed was from 5 days to 20 days back in 1937. The legislature began that year on January the 11th and ended on March 8th. It ran less than 2 months. And Governor Martin considered that entire session, approximately 500 bills. In 1979, Governor Attia considered almost 600 bills after the session in that 120-day period out of the 906 bills that had been submitted that year or had been passed by the legislature that year. So we do feel we need some breathing space, and it has been a considerable period of time since the breathing space had been provided.
Is there any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Earl.
I got into the middle of this issue in the last session, and I also helped write the ballot title. And Representative Wally Priestley raised the issue about the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House not signing the bill, and thereby denying the people their right of referendum. And you think that this language takes care of that situation?
Mr. Chairperson, Representative Otto, I did not believe and do not believe now that there was a problem. I do not believe that the Speaker or the President has that power. If they had that power, they've had it since 1859, and the bill didn't deal with that one way or the other. This likewise does not deal with any question of what a Speaker or a President would do. The bill would have to come to the governor within the constitutional time frame, according to opinions that the Attorney General has written. We are simply saying that we feel that the question of when the petition circulation process starts under the present House Joint Resolution 2 has nothing to do with when the President or the Speaker signs. And so that particular concern, I believe, has been alleviated.
Mr. Chairman, if I may continue.
Representative Lowe?
I think that you are right, but the political realities are that when someone gets out there and writes a ballot title, they can go ahead and make charges that the right of the people are being denied. Now, I guess my point that I'm trying to make is if you want this HJR 2 to become law, then you're going to have to start realizing that you're working in the political world. And if I were you, I would meet with Representative Priestley, address his concerns, if possible, and I would also meet with Kathleen Buffet. Now, Mr. Chairman, before we take action on this bill, I would like to have Kathleen Buffet in here because she has a lot of background in this, and she can really enlighten us as to all the implications and everything. And I guess I would also ask Representative Priestley to share his concerns, if he has any at this time.
Representative Priestley was invited.
He was invited, and he's not here?
You want to give the...
You aren't going to take action today.
No, we're not. Okay, I just wanted to take as much testimony as possible. But
okay.
We can have another hearing in a possible work session.
I guess my point is, if you want a bill, you're going to have to...
Like Thursday.
With our present system of voters' pamphlet and all, you're going to have to satisfy some concerns out there.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's the only concern. I think you're going to have to satisfy four members of this committee's concern.
That's right.
Mr. Chairperson?
Yes.
Representative Otto, I have not had any intensive discussion with Representative Priestley on this. Representative Priestley, in passing a few days ago, indicated that he had looked at House Joint Resolution 2 and he thought that his concerns had been taken care of.
Wait a minute. Representative Priestley is here.
Oh, good.
Representative Priestley, did you come to testify on HJR 2?
No, I haven't read the bill yet. I was going to come to get educated.
We're almost through with the testimony. Okay, that's all right. Okay, are there any further questions, Jim? Jim, thank you very much. Is there anyone else here that would like to testify on
House Joint Resolution 2. We will close the hearing on...
Can I ask a question?
Representative Gilmore.
What was the vote by which this failed at the last regular session?
I don't have...
Was it close?
No. It went down.
In your judgment, Representative Otto, was that the sole reason because of the referendum issue?
I think the comments were made in the voters' pamphlet, and I think the issue was the right of referendum of the people.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? We'll close the hearing on HGR 2. We'll start the hearing on House Bill 2093. And I would call, excuse me, Ivan Hoyer. Who? Oh, excuse me. Bob Gunstead, would you come up first, please? And I'll call Ivan after that. Okay. Write that red and stand by it. Okay, Bob, go ahead. Identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bob Grinstead from Legislative Research. And I was one of two people responsible for the Sunset Report relating to the State Board of Tax Service Examiners. And we're here to provide a brief overview of this report and its activities. This board was established in 1973 to license persons who, on a commercial basis, assist taxpayers with the preparation of personal income tax returns. Before proceeding, I want to point out just a couple of things about who is regulated and what practices are regulated by the board. Obviously, several different groups of persons provide tax services. These include CPAs, public accountants, attorneys, IRS enrolled agents, and so-called commercial tax preparers. This board regulates only two of these groups, the commercial tax preparers and the enrolled agents. By far the largest and best known commercial preparer, of course, is the firm of H&R Block Incorporated. Not as well known, enrolled agents are persons who have met special qualifications established by the IRS and are allowed to practice before the Internal Revenue Service representing taxpayers at administrative proceedings. Also, the board only regulates persons who prepare personal income tax returns. It does not regulate anyone preparing a partnership tax return or returns relating to any other types of taxes, such as corporate income taxes, gift taxes, inheritance taxes, or employment taxes. Whether taxpayers should be regulated was an issue in Congress and in state legislatures in the early 1970s. There was some evidence at the time that at least some tax preparers were incompetent and were engaged in unscrupulous practices. As a result, a number of federal regulations apply to persons who prepare tax returns. Generally, these regulations require tax preparers to maintain certain records, place identifying numbers on all returns prepared, and the regulations establish civil penalties for such offenses as negligence and intentional disregard of the tax laws. California is the only other state to regulate tax preparers. Unlike the Oregon law, which establishes basic education experience, examination, and continuing education requirements for tax preparers, the California law, which was also enacted in 1973, merely required tax preparers to register with the state's Consumer Affairs Department and deposit a bond. The California law was recently repealed and was replaced with another registration law, but one which also requires certain basic and continuing education requirements. The State Board of Tax Service Examiners under ORS Chapter 673 issues two types of licenses. One is for tax preparers and another is for tax consultants. A tax preparer may only work under the supervision of a tax consultant. The board requires tax preparers to complete a 60-hour basic course in personal income tax law and to pass a 5-hour examination. It requires tax consultants to have 2 years' experience as a tax preparer and to complete a more difficult exam. The board itself is composed of 5 licensed tax consultants appointed by the Director of Commerce. The license is about 4,000 persons. its primary activities are the investigation of complaints against licensed and unlicensed persons and preparation of the licensing exams. House Bill 2093 would reestablish the State Board of Tax Service Examiners for another 8 years and make the following changes. It would add 2 members to the board, including a public member. It would change the appointing authority for board members from the Director of Commerce to the Governor, subject to Senate confirmation. It would require applicants who are enrolled agents and who are currently exempt from the licensing exams to take an examination in Oregon tax law. It would require that tax planning be among the subjects covered on the tax consultant's exam, and it would allow the board to use revenues collected from civil penalties to carry out and enforce the law. Those civil penalties are now deposited in the State General Fund. This is the brief overview of the board, its activities, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to respond to those.
Are there any questions? Representative Schoon.
The last thing you mentioned about being able to use the penalty money for operations, is that common to other boards and commissions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schoon, to my knowledge, I think only one other board has this authority. The State Board of Accountancy, in the Sunset Review, which underwent a Sunset Review in 1981, received this authority, and that's the only other board I'm aware of.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Shipwright.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob, for my own benefit, what is the definition of an enrolled agent?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shipwright, an enrolled agent is a person who is allowed to practice before the Internal Revenue Service. Basically, this involves representing a taxpayer at IRS administrative proceedings. An enrolled agent can represent a taxpayer at an audit and in any of the appeals process. In order to be able to do that, they must pass an examination. I think it's a 2-day exam, various tax subjects administered by the Internal Revenue Service.
Hmm.
Originally, enrolled agents were exempt from the Oregon tax preparers law, but they were brought under the law in 1977.
They currently are under the tax
preparers. That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Is there any further questions? I'd like to, I don't know, I didn't quite catch. Yeah, you possibly could have explained it, but can you tell me, explain the difference between a tax planner and a tax consultant?
And Mr. Chairman, a tax preparer and a tax consultant?
A tax planner and a tax consultant.
Okay, I meant to say a tax preparer, which is anyone. Okay, I don't think I really know. I mean, there is no license for a tax planner. The board only licenses two people, tax preparers and tax consultants.
And I realize that, but
right.
I'm saying, is there a difference between the two that you know of? If you're not, there's some other witnesses I can ask this question of.
Well, the state doesn't establish any classification for a tax planner, and so it's not a regulated profession.
Representative Schoon.
I don't think you understood the question. You're thinking planner, and the chairman is saying the difference between a preparer and a consultant, I think.
So tax planner. I'm really laying this question to you from a public accountant that was concerned about it, and he's been in the business a long time, and I thought it was an interesting question that he posed to me, and I thought I'd just find out. Now, apparently, yeah, you do have people who call themselves tax planners.
Is that
an investment individual who shows you how to invest your money in investments that keep you from paying a bundle of taxes? Is that the same thing as a tax consultant?
I'm sure that a lot of tax consultants are engaged in tax planning, as are accountants and attorneys and enrolled agents.
So you make no distinction between the two.
Not very good.
I don't know if someone would be engaged in tax planning and not be involved in preparing returns, and perhaps someone from the profession could more clearly answer that.
Is there any further questions? Thank you very much. Ivan Hoyer. Okay, Elder Blundell, would you like to join Mr. Hoyer at the... Mr. Hoyer, keeps identify yourself and give us your testimony, please.
My name is Ivan Hoyer. I'm vice chairman of the Oregon State Board of Tax Service Examiners. I'm from Cottage Grove. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I am spokesman for the board for House Bill 2093, which is specifically related to the continuance of the State Board of Tax Service Examiners, as recommended by the 61st Oregon Legislative Sunset Review Committee. It has been difficult for me to adequately organize this information because, like everything, it's a forest for the trees. You're pretty close to the operation, but we'll try to do so in a manner favorable to your liking. It is interesting to note that the commercial preparation of income tax return has been done far longer in Oregon than most people realize, becoming particularly important as a profession.